Hello everyone, welcome to JFG tonight. Sometimes the harvest of August brings surprise fruits that one did not expect. What a wonderful moment here seeing Andy Warski being knocked out this afternoon by Salt Papi. Boom. You can see the IQ point being drained out of his head. We are at 12 IQ, 7 IQ, 0 IQ. Nothing left, ladies and gentlemen. 0 IQ moment for Andy Warski. Not as strong as the AIDS would hit you, but strong enough to knock Andy Warski out unconscious. The referee had to stop the fight. I was pretty sure that Salt Papi would win because I had heard that Salt Papi was a trained boxer, although, you know, an amateur and an influencer on the internet. It's very different if you've been following some kind of training versus Andy, who has been following zero training in all of his life and has never been able to accomplish anything. Ultimately, the reason Andy lost this boxing match is the same reason why he failed in his YouTube career, which is that Andy doesn't like dedication. I knew that about Andy. I've seen him, you know, pot smoker in Toronto, having hundreds of thousands of followers on YouTube, but being unable to motivate himself to do regular shows. That was the big problem with Andy. And the training seems to have been the same thing. Now, people on Discord, including Forex Sharks, were saying, well, JF, he has trained for a whole 2 years. He brags about training on each of his show. But I have information to the contrary. I have a man who contacts me through Telegram. His name is Chad Hominem, and he says, no, he didn't train, though. He came to the gym 1 to 2 times a week, and all the coaches said he was trash. He wouldn't spar anyone his size or taller either. A disgrace to Canada. So it seems that the bragging side of Andy has self-deceived into thinking that he was able to box. But the facts on the ground reported straight from Mississauga, Ontario, you cannot become a good boxer in a couple of months if you only do 1 to 2 times a week. You will need 24/7 just do this for many months to get to the point where you master some of these techniques. And Salt Papi was very smart about this boxing. He had footwork and he was completely fooled. You know, Salt Papi was running circles around him, and it's just a 20 seconds fight because Andy fell unconscious at 20 seconds. Salt Papi, you could see his footwork, you could see him get in, and he got him with a little jab, not so straight, and then a left hook, which shook Andy, and then another left hook. So a double left hook is what led to the fall of Andy. I've appreciated the whole show. I think it's fascinating, those fights of people that we know as human beings first. Because to train the best boxer, it's a little bit like dog fights. It sucks to me. And box is not a super interesting sport to begin with. But to see human beings trying to achieve something that they are not necessarily trained for, that they haven't specialized in, that is what's beautiful to me about any combat sport. And so I actually prefer this to professional boxing. There's more possibility, there's a wider range of qualities that you can admire in these amateurs. And also, you know them personally, you know who Sam Hyde is. And so when Sam Hyde wins or loses, it matters. I was very excited at mostly the Sam Hyde fight and the Andy Warski fight. I wanted to see Andy Warski get knocked out. And I got served exactly what I wanted to see. Boom. Andy Warski out. And then Sam Hyde. I was very interested in just Sam Hyde winning because I think that Sam Hyde is a great human being. He's just a quirky Irish guy, and I wanted him to win, just win, no matter how. And in the fight, I mean, his opponent was quite impressive. Not that he was in good shape at the cardio level, but he was built like a swimmer, you know, with the deltoid, the triangle around his neck. And I was like, holy shit, Sam Hyde is going to be facing somewhat of an athlete, not in athletic shape, but somewhat of an athlete. He was like Mr. Muscle going there. It turns out that both of them got exhausted through cardio, but Sam Hyde got the best of it. He went with his plan, which was jab-oriented. Sam Hyde was just pushing forward with the jabs, and he just scored a couple of good jabs, and eventually the exhaustion of both of them led the knockdown to have been relatively easy. And, you know, it was not like a super clean shot, like on the jaw, like Andy. It wasn't like Andy. It was more like the combination of exhaustion and the few successful jabs of Sam Hyde. But Sam Hyde has put some energy in this fight, and it was beautiful to see him kind of with the idiot strength. I guess that's the term I could use, that I would be permitted to use. Sam Hyde went in full idiot strength, and he was exhausted, so he couldn't give any more, but he gave just enough to push the other guy on the floor. As far as KSI, well, KSI, I don't know who that is. I don't know why he's an interesting person. I don't know how he's a YouTuber and why. But okay, he won his fight, and the last fight was his first fight against a professional boxer. It was a professional boxer who didn't win much in his life. He was 1-4, I believe, or 1-5, something like this. Yeah, 1-5. And he won very clearly. KSI turns out to be basically a relatively good boxer, probably could make a run in the professionals, and perhaps he would meet his man somewhere in the professional circuit. But KSI has been performing very good for someone who comes from outside the boxing domain. There was a bizarre last fight, his last fight, because it was two fights of KSI, one at the beginning and one at the end. I guess he did this for entertainment, for supplementary entertainment. And the last fight was against this professional weak boxer. And this boxer was complaining that he was getting hit in the back of the head and even in his back. But KSI was not particularly hitting on the back of the head. Of the 30 times that he complained about it, maybe KSI kind of grazed the back of the head or grazed the back. But this is something that happens in boxing. If you turn your back to the incoming punch, it's not the fault of the puncher that it ends in your back. This guy was using as a defensive tactic the idea of turning away from the punch. You cannot do this. So largely, KSI did not deserve to be kind of attacked for illegal hits when in fact they were all legal, or the vast majority of them were legal. And there were clear points where the guy was receiving a jab straight in the face, like boom. And he was like, ah, back of the head, back of the head. I was like, oh no, this guy is just too hurt. He's receiving too much of a flow of hits, and he cannot distinguish reality from fiction at this point. But good attempt, you know, with that strategy of kind of asking for the help of the referee. Maybe he could have opened a point where he gets an uppercut or something, but it didn't happen. So KSI won justly and fairly. There were also a couple of other matches. It was very interesting to see Slim against some kind of model man, a man in the modeling industry. I'm not sure though. Don't quote me on this. One of them was a model. Slim, I don't know if he faced the model or some other guy, but Slim was very interesting. It was a very good performance. And then there was Faiz Tensai, who got a good performance, but he was one of the few in this night that I think the only one who got to a decision. And the decision was completely unfair. Faiz Tensai had been winning. He had been knocking down his opponent in the first round. He had been dominating at least two other rounds. So that's a 10-8, 10-9, 10-9. At best, you would give one, maybe two rounds to the other guy, but even that wouldn't be enough. But we saw here the whole dirty aspect of boxing judges. They're like they're Andy Warsky levels of IQ, okay? So they count the punches. It's like, oh yeah, one, two, three. Oh, the glove bounces and they count it as a punch. And I suspect it's what happened that led them to give points to the black guy against Faiz Tensai, who did not at all deserve to win. He was surprised himself of winning. What a rip-off. But the boxing world is so dirty, corrupted, and filled with bad judges. It's amazing. It's what you have to deal with. It's a state monopoly, basically, I guess. I mean, if it's like the US, I don't know how it works in London, but if it's like the US and Canada, it's always the same judges and they're always as bad as they were last time. So you have to win by knockout, basically. Coming from the MMA world, I expect a little more fair. I see a little more fairness in the MMA world. And I think that in the MMA world, there's a general understanding that there is such a thing as quality of punch. And a punch that is blocked is not a punch, basically. But in boxing, it's like you can dance and they give you points for it. It's ridiculous. Faiz Tensai was clearly the most effective fighter. And to me, the world of boxing, that's why I hate it. I hate boxing. NDBL says, I enjoyed Pride back in the day. Yeah, Pride Championships, that was something very serious. Very good fights. They're still relevant. You can still watch them today and have plenty of fun. And one last thing about the boxing stuff before we jump to the super chat and the news. Sam Hyde, being a comedian, made one of his dead face jokes in which he seems very serious, and it got relayed to Hassan Piker. So we can now review the reaction of Hassan Piker to being threatened by Sam Hyde on the show.
You got anyone you want to call out in the heavyweight division?
Oh, you know it, lad. You know that, Hassan Piker! I'm coming to kill you in Los Angeles at your house!
Or in the ring.
No, in real life. I'm going to.
So, the people who are commercially involved with this thing, they don't want to be caught making that death threat, because who knows, Hassan Piker could sue them and probably get a win in court. If they have money in the US, that could put a Keemstar in trouble, that could put a Logan Paul in trouble. So the host is like, you mean in the ring? And Sam Hyde is like, no, at your house, I will kill you.
Stalk him and become obsessed with him and wear his makeup and his dresses and use his skin as a coat like the ancient Irish did.
Well, that's your winner.
Wear his skin as a coat, as the Irish did. Oh my God, Sam Hyde went just a little too far. So much so that the host eventually corrected. Keemstar was the host of this. And he said, Sam Hyde is a comedian. He was joking here. So hopefully, all of this taken together would lead the judge to not give the money to Hassan Piker, but they are surfing on a dangerous line here. You've cashed in. You've filled an arena with 40,000 people. You've sold plenty of pay-per-views across the world. You have your TV deals. You're selling your stuff at Walmart. They're selling these Gatorade bottled stuff at Walmart, CVS. You don't want Hassan Piker to be taking your money and putting it in your bank account.
No, don't fucking hide. If you're a sub, you're not getting unbanned for that. I'm just letting you know. Look, dude, if you see a mentally ill Nazi, okay, on the internet, be like, I'm going to kill Hassan Piker, okay? I'm going to come to his house and murder him. And you go, oh, this is some information that he should probably watch. Like, he should watch and address this, okay? Then, honestly, just don't post. And get the fuck out of the community.
Sam Hyde, a mentally ill Nazi. Oh my god, I love this reaction.
Be normal, dude. What the fuck's wrong with you? Think before you link.
Think before you link. Oh my god, Hassan Piker not taking the challenge. Hassan Piker, I've always pointed to an extremely weird body shape in his case. I don't know how we could call it. It's kind of a... It's not V-shaped. It's V-shaped and then it builds into a trapezoid. It is a very weird type of body, a little bit the swimming type of body. You know, very flat and very extended, like your entire body was a palm of a beaver or something. I would like to see this kind of body fighting Sam Hyde, because Sam Hyde was, although he was gassed out and he was kind of fat compared to a professional boxer, he was kind of impressive to look at. He was tall, he was extremely muscular. You know, there was some fat in there, but you could see the form of his bicep and shoulder. It was something to see. So I'd like to see Hassan Piker against Sam Hyde. Personally, my preference would be in a MMA match. But if they can do boxing, it would be somewhat interesting. All right, so that is it for the events of today in terms of boxing. I enjoyed. I think they should continue doing this. It's interesting to see this thing become physical, because the on the internet insults are cheap, but I love the idea of real fights. People were asking me if I would do better than Andy. I'm pretty sure I would do better if I have the chance to train. But if I was to engage in one of these fights, I would want a good 6 months of 5 days a week, 6 days a week training. I would be very serious about rebuilding my cardio. Will that happen? I won't promise to you, because I don't know the things of life. I'm very busy just doing my show, writing my book. But if an opportunity was to show, I would probably accept if I can do so at zero cost, which means I want my plane ticket to be purchased. I want my hotel to be purchased. But for the rest, I don't ask for money. I'm not a guy who needs much money. I could gain some money through promoting my book, just getting the public exposure. So I'm a very low cost guy that they could have. Now, I'm fat, I would have to train. So that's why I would love to have 6 months. But with 6 months, I think I could build a very competitive body to ideally play MMA, because I'm a smart guy and I've watched all of the MMAs. So I'm very aware of the culture of MMA boxing. It's really a cardio race and I don't like it personally. And I don't like the size of the gloves. It's too much too much softening, too much spreading of the force. I like the idea of a more diverse type of fighting with closer to real life condition. But yeah, there is a possibility I would accept at some point, but I'm not looking to get into it at this moment simply because I'm very busy. But if an opportunity shows up in the coming years, I would fight Andy, I would fight any of these guys, I would fight any potentially new guys, I would challenge anyone who has an intellectual problem with me. The invitation is open. If someone serious about fighting is interested, I would be in. Based says, I want to see Ryan Dawson versus whoever he wants in the ring. Jeff would become Tyler Durden. yeah, I mean, Ryan Dawson would be quite the competitor because my understanding is he has some jiu-jitsu experience, I think. But yeah, I would take on Ryan Dawson for the experience. That is not a fight that I would be confident in winning. I would prefer winning against fighting against someone I can win against. So someone who starts as an intellectual who has zero training and then gets into the training just for that event. But Ryan Dawson, as far as I know, he's a fighter. He's very experienced in this. All right, Harold has sent a super chat already. If you would like to support the show, do like Harold and click on the dollar sign below the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Make sure you add a payment method to have the button enabled. Alternatively, you can also use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. And Harold was sending 10 bucks and he said, fuck the bees, hashtag mammal supremacy. And I think this relates to something that he sent to me on Subscribestar. He was saying, I couldn't send a super chat because I never catch you live, but I wanted to send a message. I think the comparison between human and bees or humans and ants is very annoying, as worker drones are basically part of the queen's phenotype and not individuals. I think the distinction between drone/queen species and truly social species should be more prominent and well known. Comparing a social species with a beehive is retarded. If you could express in your next stream strategies to change people's thinking about this, thanks. And I was saying, I fully agree, but do you mean bees in comparison to ethnocentric or social populations, or bees in comparison to the revolutionary phenotype? Because I think that comparing bees to the revolutionary phenotype is proper. I think that what happens in a phenotypic revolution with the centralization of gene editing is that you end up having a central queen. So I think that the comparison is fit, but I wasn't sure what he was talking about. Turns out he answered that, yeah, he's talking about social, he's talking about human societies being compared to bees. And with this, I absolutely agree. I answered, the bees and the ants are a society in the same sense that your organs form a society in your body, but not in the sense of competing sexual agents interacting with each other, sometimes cooperatively, sometimes competitively, which is what human societies are. He was completing his question by saying the distinction between reproductive individuals interacting and drones/queens interacting is not clear enough. The drone's queen's form of life needs to have its own name/category. Maybe it does, I don't know. But normies have the impression that bees have a society when they don't. They are more like an arm or a leg of the one queen life form. Drones are only a phenotype. The widespread lack of understanding this distinction will make people more susceptible to falling for the coming gene printing corporations centralizing reproduction. A human society would be a group of individual reproductive units who are pursuing their own interests by working together. this kind of society is only sustainable so long as the individuals are all benefiting themselves enough to keep doing it. A drone queen society is fully functional without benefiting the drones in any way. As it does not matter if they reproduce, the queen will still go on. I think more people should understand the difference and be disgusted by bees and ants. They are a weird alien-like life form that is very far removed from the norms of mammals. Hashtag mammals supremacy. Well, you said it in the most beautiful way I've seen it yet. So a very well constructed argument. I've been trying to bring attention to this because there are people, E.O. Wilson and others, who have kept making these parallels between bee societies and human societies. And the fact is, if you see any parallel, like communication or whatever, that parallel is just random. The fact is that bee societies are fundamentally evolving for the queen in the same way that all of your organs, your arms, your brain are evolving to save your balls and to allow you to project yourself into the next generation. So the proper term for bees and ants colonies is that they are an organism. And they are not even a super organism, like the E.O. Wilsons of this world would say. They are just an organism. Now, to anyone who says, well, JF, what about the fact that they are separate bodies? Like, there are individual ants, right? Aren't they an organism too? Well, the individual ants are organisms in the same way that your cells are single-cell organism. That is, they're not. They're not at all. The trick that your body found to be big is to multiply what used to be an organism, a cell. But it multiplies the cell by creating clone versions of it that are not at all interested evolutionarily in their own interest. They are really interested at saving the sexual line of sperm and egg. Similarly, the sterile workers of the bees and ant colonies don't have their own reproductive interest other than saving the queen. So that is extremely important to understand, because if there ends up to be some communication between one bee and another, sharing information, that is not cooperation between two competing entities. That is cooperation between two subcomponents of a body. So the way a bee will communicate to another bee is exactly for the same reasons that your liver will communicate with your lungs. It's one organ making a signal for another organ so that the central organ for which they evolve succeeds better. Now we should ask, what is the difference between sterile workers? One moment. What is the difference between, you asked for a term to designate this kind of evolution. I actually regret not having a chapter on this, on the revolutionary phenotype, because I've actually come up with a theory that could have a single term apply to both the evolution of multicellular bodies like us and multi-individual colonies like bees and ants. And colonies is really not the right term. I hate this term because colony is the idea of taking over, colonizing. And it's an action that a group does. But a bee colony is just the set of handicapped babies produced by a bee for itself. And in that sense, it's like all of the phenotypic cells in your bodies. The term I came with to explain the original evolution of this type of arrangement is genetic subjugation. Because ultimately, I believe that what leads to a full body and what leads to a full bee colony is the same process. It is the inverse of the revolutionary phenotype. So the revolutionary phenotype is when a phenotype becomes a gene. I believe that what leads to a bee colony is when a gene becomes a phenotype. So when you think about the first bee that ever was, let's say before there were bee colonies, that bee would produce only babies. And these babies would be genes, basically. They would replicate and they would be meant for future replication also. So they were parent-offspring relationships. Eventually, some of these genes had an interest in stopping to be genes and starting to serve the parent. And that day, bee colonies started. That day, a bunch of things that were meant to be genes were recruited to serve as phenotype. Now, the conditions in which it happens can be, that there can be many hypotheses, but I would say it must be something around the lines of the most efficient way for the queen to, for the parent to make a lot of offspring is to sacrifice some of these offspring to use them as collateral tools of some kind. So sometimes your babies ends up serving so much your evolutionary interest that you end up creating fake babies that are really just meant to save you rather than go on with their own life. That is how you invert a gene and turn it into a phenotype. And that is how multicellular bodies evolve and bee colonies and ant colonies evolve. I don't have the final answer to you to how do we educate people about this. I would say simply push forward the theory of genetic subjugation. Yes, Lapitop says you can make a new edition with additional stuff. Maybe at the 20-year mark, after 20 years of TRP, maybe I will publish an additional chapter version. That's what I intend to do. I don't want to do it now. I want people to take in the important theory to me, which is the revolutionary phenotype. But eventually I will do this addition. I've already done so in video form, but I will do it eventually in written form. Lapitop says, when ants build an ant's nest, it's a bit like cells building a body. They probably use gradients of sense to adjust the same algorithm they are all running. Yes, but call different functions depending on local sense. Exactly. Now contrast this with human societies. Human societies, we do not communicate everything. We do not communicate everything that could be useful to the other party. To the contrary, there are some other parties, we will deny them access to information. We deceive. We hide information because we're ultimately at competition with everyone around us other than our close, close family. And so we do engage in some amount of information sharing and cooperation, but we would expect that the kind of cooperation that we will engage in will rarely be self-sacrificial and always be designed in a way as to favor the two parties. That is why we have a market. That is why the market works in a human society, but it doesn't work in an ant's colony. In an ant's colony, the priority is the survival of the queen. The actions will be self-sacrificial if needed, etc. So yes, those are two very contrasted ways to evolve. Ukraine's nuclear agency warns risk of hydrogen radioactive leaks following damage to Zaporizhzhia. They've been doing so for many weeks now, trying to drag the attention. Hey, listen to us. We're in danger. There's going to be a catastrophe that will affect Europe. I'd believe none of it because they've been doing it before, and ultimately it's a way of trying to recruit the NATO countries into this war, and it's ridiculous. Doubting Thomas sends $25. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, hope all is well, JF. I wrote you a question in two posts in the debate room of your Discord server related to the origin of life. Hopefully you will find it interesting. Let us see what he has to say. There he is. A few years back, I heard an argument regarding the origins of life. It was attempting to refute the entropic argument that there are extremely few Goldilocks zone areas of the universe where the temperature was right for life to begin. Okay. However, this argument pointed out that although the universe is mostly extremely cold, it was also extremely hot right after the beginning of the Big Bang. Thus, there must also have been an in-between transitory period in which temperatures everywhere in the universe was at the right levels for life to begin and exist, the source of this temperature being what is now the cosmic microwave background, which has since redshifted slash cooled off considerably. Thus, it was argued in the article that there was plenty of opportunity for life to start. Recalling this, I decided to test the plausibility of this by estimating what period of time would this occur. Not successfully finding an equation, I took in the plot from this image graph, corresponding equation to be roughly y equals 9.8 minus 0.5x, where y is the exponent of the temperature in 10 to the y Kelvin, and x is the exponent in 10 to the x seconds after the Big Bang. My question is, roughly what temperature range do you believe printers can start replicating? I took the temperature range from minus 89 degrees Celsius to 130 degrees Celsius and computed that the CMB was at a suitable temperature between 890,000 years to 3.85 million years after the Big Bang. Now it's about a 3 million year window. It might seem small, but again, consider that this is all across the universe, not just in a few pockets. The real trouble, unfortunately, is when I realize that scientists currently suspect that the first stars formed about 100 million years after the Big Bang. So there probably were not enough complex atoms like carbon to create replicators, as we only know them to be produced inside stars, probably only the simplest of atoms, such as hydrogen and helium, existed. However, is it possible that the first replicators could function at temperatures below minus 89 degrees Celsius? If so, maybe this window could be extended to make this hypothesis plausible. Well, it's a very interesting endeavor that you jumped into, and I'm looking at... Let's see if I can share this graph with people. So the graph of the temperatures of the universe, and the question is, at which temperature, at which time of the universe, would it have been viable for life to emerge? I think it's very interesting, the questions that you've asked. However, you have to be careful that much of your interpretation around temperature relies on searching exactly the kind of life that we are. That is, yes, from minus 89 to 100 degrees Celsius, that would be the kind of range I would expect the kind of life that we are to be able to live, to be able to print. It's a totally realistic window that you've picked, but for molecules, and for molecules especially of the kind that we are. For example, think of a world that would be made of metal alloys of all kinds, flowing copper and gold atoms and silver atoms and sodium atoms, all floating in a relatively high temperature bath, but they would be liquid. You know, you might be at many thousands of degrees Celsius here to get these metal liquid. But you can totally imagine a life form forming in those conditions. So my point to tell you here is that if you're talking about things happening in water, then of course it's going to be between 0 degrees Celsius and 100 degrees Celsius. But that's just because water is liquid at this temperature. If you imagine a life form that would be living in a metal, liquid metal environment, then that life form, its window would be around 3,000 degrees Celsius to 6,000 degrees Celsius. And here, I think that choosing water as particularly fit for life is an entropic error. It is an error that we commit because we are in a planet where there's water and there's life. There is no sign at all, no statistical and probabilistic knowledge of any kind that allows us to make this guess. There could very well be other liquids. It does seem that liquid or gas is probably where replication is likely to happen most, simply because crystallized matter, if it doesn't have a phase, if it doesn't have a season where it goes liquid, doesn't leave place for much operation and much movement. Liquids leave place for reconfiguration and random re-encounters of molecules, and it seems that liquid is particularly fit for life. But to affirm that water is particularly fit for life, I have my doubts. So that's the first thing I would criticize from your stuff. Secondly, yes, before you mentioned it, I was seeing the problem that you're not going to have solar systems at 3 million years into the Big Bang. 3 million years into the Big Bang, you are in a soup of photonic energy, I believe. If I understand correctly, matter has not had the chance to attract to single points that you would call planets and solar systems and galaxies. So you're kind of in a general soup of lots of energy, lots of heat, lots of density, but not that has had the chance to aggregate. Now, we shouldn't exclude the fact that in this environment, you could have life replication going on. But the replication of what, you have to ask? Probably not carbon, probably not water. Probably the replication of perhaps chains of photonic excitations, replications of quantum field configurations. I could see it happening. The question is basically, is there enough malleability of the physical system in which you are? And is there enough repeated interaction to allow a replication process to be born, to be continued, to be sustained, and to have a molecular space to explore in the form of mutations for long enough that you would get some kind of complexity? And that I would be very open to life form happening in liquid metal, life form happening at extremely cold temperature, but happening in the form of solidification of crystals above an already existing crystal. I would also be open to life forms existing at extremely high temperature, but then not in molecules, but more in quantum field configurations. I think that your hypothesis is good to find the kind of entropic life that we would be biased to think is the only life. But I think we should remain much more open than this. Doubting Thomas, that would be my answer to your question. Lendald Guntram says, liquid metal life forms just like the T-1000 Terminator. Yeah, I mean, who says that there cannot be something like, I don't know, maybe there are some metals that behave just like lipids behave toward water. What's so special about lipids forming the cell membrane? Well, it's that they hate water. But I've seen some metal display that kind of behavior. You know, some metals have great difficulty soldering around other metals. So some metals basically have this kind of hydrophobicity that fat has toward water, but they have it against other metals. So everything is possible. You could very well imagine a bunch of certain molecules in liquid metal would form a circle, and certain molecules would be good at replicating inside that circle, and I don't see why it wouldn't be the case. Based says, no, not Dawson as an opponent to you. He would likely choose Spencer, etc., far before you. I don't want to see JF hurt, but interesting to see the planning versus execution result. JF flicks a cigarette at Jay Dyer and says something in French before he goes in autistic techie, followed by an apeshit barrage. I'm not sure exactly what you're talking about. The idea of me taking a fight would be probably because no one else wants to fight. You say Spencer. I don't think Richard Spencer wants to be a boxer. I would love to be an MMA artist because I just like martial art. And it would give me an excuse to do some cardio, you know. I would certainly come out of the experience much more fit. So it would all be win-win, even if I lose. Gray says, did JF ever review the 2019 Terminator? I did my ultimate review of Terminator 2, and I did a review that was glossing over all of the Terminators in the Guide to Culture. But I don't know if they are private, their videos. But I did it this year, talking about all of the Terminators. I could talk about it on a future show if you'd like to see me do it. Since I'm not, I think the Guide to Culture was a private show that only paying members would get this year. One Hit Wonder, Dee Snider's meltdown over MAGA fascist continues. He says, nope, and I wouldn't. That's censorship, but I can let them know how I feel and the truth about We're Not Gonna Take It stands for. It is and always has been a song about choice, pro-choice, period. Attention, QAnon, MAGA fascist. Every time you sing We're Not Gonna Take It, remember it was written by cross-dressing libtard, tree-hugging half-Jew who hates everything you stand for. It was you and people like you that inspired every angry word of that song, so fuck off. This made me realize something, because I went back and looked at the Twisted Sister We're Not Gonna Take It video clip. It is horrible. It is horrible to see. To see this guy, what is it, in the 80s, I believe? 1984. 1984, the album Stay Hungry by Twisted Sister. You can see that the propaganda against the white family has been starting very clearly, even before I'm born. Because that's 1984, I'm born in 1984. And the whole thing starts with a father who's kind of aggressive, and the mother is trying to say, oh, you know, let him play some music. It's okay. He's just a child. And the child is playing some rock and roll music. The father is frustrated, and it's like, we're not going to take it. We're going to keep doing our rock and roll. But he, look at this, he transforms into the adult version of himself, and holy shit, is that disgusting. So already you had this whole term of, I'm gonna chop my balls to piss off daddy, because I have daddy issues, because my dad is merely asking that in his house I don't play rock and roll music while he eats. And therefore deafening him, you know, and keeping my family from being able to talk to each other at the dinner table. It was all there already in these old video clips. And then he has all of his cross-dressing friends coming to beat his dad, and they're like, and he's like convincing the young kids to be a twisted sister. We're not gonna take it. No. And holy shit, is that an ugly face? I think they were actively trying to have ugly faces to be more shocking. But all of the themes of the modern left were already present in rock and roll, subverting the youth, revolting against authority, being ugly. It was all there, all along. And I didn't realize, although, you know, there are some videos by Black Bill that show us that it was there since 1940s, 1920s. But I hadn't realized that rock and roll was basically a Jewish accomplishment. And we can see here that this guy is bragging that he is half Jew, and that basically he's saying, it is my half Jewry that led me to be so angry about what I was mentioning in my song. Absolutely stunning to me what we keep discovering about this episode, because I can remember finding those people who resisted rock and roll as, you know, conservative religious idiots. And yet now I understand they were trying to warn us of something that eventually culminated in the destruction of culture. They were right. They were right that rock and roll was a subversive enterprise. What? Since $31. Thank you so much for supporting the show. He says, Jeff, last week you said you don't like dealing with cashiers because they will ask you annoying questions like, what is the difference between a fucking green Swiss chard and a fennel? Jeff, what is the difference between a fucking green Swiss chard and a fennel? Well, one difference is that I've been extremely successful this year at farming Swiss chard. I had two different pots, two containers. It was large, like a table, like a half table, filled with Swiss chard and going above the containers even. So Swiss chard is basically from the family of beets. And so unlike the beets where you are taking the root part of the vegetable, the Swiss chard are simply the leaves that you take. So it's basically a shoot with a large lettuce-like leaf, but it's a slightly rougher than lettuce, and therefore you cook it 5 minutes and you eat it as a green veggie, a little bit like the Southerner Americans would do. Mama JF compares it as a salty rhubarb. Yeah, very good comparison, although it doesn't have at all the sourness of rhubarb. It's really, you eat it like a green veggie. Fennel is a bulb, a giant bulb vegetable that seems to be in the family of dill. And so you end up with a big white bulb with super strong shoots being sent, and then small leaves, small dill pile of leaves. That is what the fennel is. Fennel requires much more cooking than Swiss chard, and it is much, much more rough. Fennel is not a very charming vegetable to me. I think there are issues with fennel. People were trying to hypothesize on my reaction to Andy Warski getting knocked out. Yeah, that was pretty much the face I was making today when I saw that Andy Warski had been knocked out. U.S. intelligence chief tells Congress she is conducting damage assessment of documents taken from Mar-a-Lago. That's a non-news, because you're not saying there is damage. You're saying you are doing damage assessment. And it's so evil to it's so violating of the presumption of innocence of Trump. It's like I was to say, oh yes, hello, I'm an expert. I am currently doing a criminal assessment of Grape Skoda in the regular chat. I am looking into every evidence possible of abusive behavior by Grape Skoda, this individual on which I'm making an investigation. Tell us if you got something. Tell us if there is damage to the documents. No, I'm conducting a damage assessment. Please let me do my work. It might take a couple of months, but please know that currently I am damage assessing the documents that Trump had in Mar-a-Lago. Motorcyclist in Florida killed after being hit from behind by Tesla. Oh my God. There was no evidence in this case. It's not clear yet what caused the Tesla to do this. Was it on automated drive? But it seems, basically, they say that there have been many incidents where a Tesla has just drove into a motorcyclist. This one died. And it seems that basically the Tesla is racist against motorcycles. It doesn't quite detect them as much as it would a car. And so it's like, okay, there are no obstacles. Let's keep going. I mean, you have to be careful. You are telling an AI to make decisions for you. This AI has kind of camera-like things that are sending luminous signals, lasers, getting back the info. What happens if the guy is a motorcyclist and he's covered his whole motorcycle in leather that doesn't get captured as well by the camera? It's insane to me that we're running with these Tesla auto drive features, that it's offered at all. In the current condition of AI, I would never do this. World's most popular password manager with more than 33 million users discloses a security incident. I've always been extremely alarmed at the fact that more and more people are storing their passwords on services. And these services sometimes are not even encoded on your own computer. They are held in some central server, so that you can get your password anywhere you are. Well, if you can get your passwords anywhere you are, someone also can get your passwords anywhere you are. It's called LastPass. I've never used that service. I'm happy. But 2 weeks ago, they detected some unusual activity. So who knows? This will end up being dumped. And yes, Bamzal, the program was LastPass. Why would you store your passwords in something called LastPass? It's like, it's telling you it's the last time you're ever going to use them. Channel Awesome says, I use a password manager that is on my hardware wallet. People using cloud services are plain dumb. Yeah, I mean, and it's just a violation of basic internet principles. The idea is central servers, even those where you log in, should not even have a copy of your password, which is why when you log into a website, you're actually, if it's well programmed, you're actually not sending your password to the server. You are hatching the password through bit exchanges, and you're shuffling it, and your SHA-256 in it. And what gets to the server is something that only your password could get to, but that they cannot recover your password from it. So the idea is you should be the only person having your password. And when you are logging to something, you shouldn't be sending your password. Your computer is sending a code that it knows your password, but not the password itself, so that one cannot ever recover it from it. Judge says he has preliminary intent to appoint a special master to oversee the Mar-a-Lago search review. Look, this, I'm happy because CNN had been covering this with experts in legal stuff, and they were saying, it's unbelievable that Trump is asking for a special master. There is no precedent of law. And the FBI is already very well handling this with their special review things that they've taken. You know, they've taken precautions and they've designated a special team to do that review. Well, it says that the judge disagrees with the CNN experts. And so fuck off, CNN experts. Trump was entitled to get a special master. The goal will be to remove the evidence that shouldn't be in the hands of the FBI. Evidence at last that the proton has intrinsic charm. Oh my god, I feel that Ray Fleming will be triggered by this news. An analysis of the distribution of the elementary particles that make up the proton provides evidence that it contains a type of quark known as an intrinsic charm quark, verifying a proposal made four decades ago. I'm not super knowledgeable in this domain, but I understand that like charge, like plus and minus for the electricity domain, the quarks have their own charge, and their charge happens to be called quark. Charm. It's one of the charges they can have. And so they are now trying to pinpoint if the quark in the proton has the charm in and of itself, or if it's outside of it as an emergent phenomenon. I think that Ray Fleming will be fuming. DK Shadow says they have fractal charge. Well, they also have fractal charge, which Ray Fleming also would contest. But they have this other dimension, which is the charm dimension. They called it charm because apparently they didn't have anything else. But it's another kind of charging. It's metaphorically analogous to electrical charge. Mentor of Jeffrey Epstein found dead in a Connecticut apartment. Stephen Offenberg, known mentor to Jeffrey Epstein and convicted Ponzi schemer, was found dead in an apartment in Derby, Connecticut. Police could not identify the body initially due to extreme decomposition over the course of at least 7 days. The cause of death has not been released, but autopsies see no signs of trauma. A private investigator for a woman who identified herself as a sexual assault victim of Epstein's called police and requested a welfare check at the multifamily home on Tuesday. She had not heard from Offenberg for 5 days, and that was unusual, police said. So, I didn't know this guy. I don't know what happened to him, but apparently he was being followed by a private investigator related to a woman who would be a victim of Jeff Epstein. DK Shadow says, no, Jeff, the one half or two-thirds are the electrical charge. The charm quark is a second generational particle. Okay, well, I will trust you on this. I will trust you on this. But isn't it the case that the charm quark has a dimension on which it can have charm up, charm down, something like this? I mean, I have opened this whole segment by saying I'm not an expert in this. But isn't it the case that there is such a thing as the plus and minus of the electrical domain? It also exists in the charm domain. That was my remembering. And my remembering is that charm isn't a isn't a generational particle. I thought that those were the muons and the taus, something like this. Standard model. Let's Google it. Standard model of particle physics. I cannot zoom on. They made something that was meant to be practical, but I cannot. Okay, there it is. Okay. So, three generations of matter. Up, down. Oh, you're right. So, the charm is the up of the second generation of quark matter. The strange is the down of the second generation of quark. Okay, so I think we were both right. The charm dimension is analogous to the up and down dimension, which is analogous to the plus and minus, isn't it? It's analogous in the sense that it... Oh, no. Yeah. Okay, the up and down is not analogous to the plus and minus. It is just a different dimension on which certain generations of matter can be assigned, but it is not a field. It is therefore just a characteristic of a quark of second generation that is opposed to the strange characteristic. And we have in the third generation of matter, the top and the bottom characteristic. You were right, DK Shadow. Thank you for correcting me. I mean, I've never figured out what these things are because I don't need this. White sends $51. Thank you so much. He says, Jeff, a while back you talked about how years ago people gave you money to finish your book, The Moral Signal, and how you feel bad for still not having finished it. My question is, what kind of moral signal are you sending to people in delaying finishing your book, The Moral Signal? Well, I am sending a moral signal. I am sending a signal that I want this book to be important and well done. So I'm not going to publish a book that I'm not fully proud of. And when I say proud of, I mean something that I feel is like a hammer hit on science that just sets the standard. So yes, I'm very serious about, I want my second book to be maybe not as spectacular as my first book, because my first book touches at something extremely fundamental, but I want it to be as big of a hit in science, in current science, and I want it to be unavoidable in the same way the revolutionary phenotype will be unavoidable. There is simply no way this can be ignored for 100 years. So I know that I'm headed toward becoming an absolutely respected and acknowledged scientist. I just don't know if this will happen before I die. But I want the same thing for the moral signal. I want it to be a final hit on mimetics and weak theories of human culture. Yeah, that's what I'm sending as a signal. And I think that the people understand. The people who have sent me money, they are much more interested in having a book that is valuable for generations than just having a book out. Having a book out is easy. I can publish 10 books if you want. But a book that you can hand to your children and they will be like, holy shit, this guy, you funded this guy? And now this guy is being recognized as coming out with this theory. That is surprising. That is what, and I think it's what interests this particular donor that I'm thinking about, because that's what he told me. He wanted to, and there is a part of the book in which I explain the dedication to him. And what he shared with me was that, you know, he wants to pass this book to his child. And he wants his child to be able in 50 years from now to say, wow, my dad funded this book. My dad made it happen. Based says, I agree he would not accept. I am plus or minus pleasantly surprised, JF. I knew you were an MMA analytical enthusiast, but assume you would say that the body is a very frail instrument and it would be idiotic to engage in these things if it's not for survival. I can see both sides, mainly thrills and risk avoiding. You're right, you're right. I am mostly risk avoiding. But also, I don't think there's much chance of death on an amateur MMA fight. I trust the referee system to be caring for my security, safety. And also, there is something ultimate about fighting that I would take more risks fighting than I would parachuting. I just don't give a shit about parachute. But the idea of fighting once in my life and for real and really being dedicated to it, I love the idea. I love the idea of challenging my body in that way. Also, perhaps it wouldn't be something I would recommend an 18-year-old intellectual does. But I'm soon going to be a 40-year-old intellectual, and so it's like my body is going to the dumpster no matter what. So even if I was to take a couple of hits on the head and lose a couple of IQ points like Andy did today, that wouldn't be dramatic, you know? I think that what I had to do that was intelligent in life, I have done most of it. And I can have a little leeway of losing a couple IQ points and I wouldn't be too alarmed at it. Lapitop says charges for electromagnetism like mass is for gravity, except it can have negative values. I assume there is something similar for nuclear forces, right? This force is super strong, but very, very short range. Yes, and I guess that the equivalent is up and down then. But it's not presented as a charge, it's presented as a different quark. Now, Ray Fleming has commented on the fact that the force is super strong, but it's very short range. And he thinks that the strong force is due to a Casimir effect between particles. That is one of the most interesting propositions I've heard in physics lately. Gavin McInnes, a couple of months ago, was saying, just thought you should know that if you're anonymous online, you're a coward. And someone is now laughing at him. He says, how's that working out for you, Gavin? Oh, right, you are in jail now. You won't see this. And people are publishing these memes of a fake arrest. I believe it's not the real arrest. But it does seem, according to what I covered yesterday, that Gavin McInnes may be in jail right now. There has not been updates on his gab other than yesterday what I showed was a comment of a comedian friend of his. So, poor Gavin, maybe in jail for some maybe January 6th related persecution. I don't know. By the way, I've had some more specifications about... One moment. I've had some specification from the Crucible Man, Andrew. You know how yesterday I talked about his talk-shitting extravaganza, his talk-shitting of Nick Fuentes, and he mentioned starting a new platform, Confi Stream. Maybe it's confi.stream, I'm not sure. He actually contacted me and invited me on the platform. So there will be a new platform. He says it's basically... I think it's going to look like Cozy TV, like the America First People, but he hates the America First People, and he wanted to develop his own thing. So he's starting this business of having a streaming platform with channels being created on it by various people. He has invited me to create a channel, I have respectfully declined for now. I've never liked these private platforms. I've never liked the idea of competing for a small crowd of specialized viewers. I've always liked the idea that I had risen on YouTube, and YouTube was where everyone was headed, and it was open to everyone, and everyone else could do a better video than me. And I kind of like this aspect of Odyssey, that it reproduces an open platform principle. My problem with these private platforms where you have to apply, you have to befriend with Andy to start something, my problem is that it doesn't lead to open competition, and eventually it specializes and the audience reduces, and eventually you end up having a bunch of incel extremists who just adore Nick Fuentes and who consume femboy porn on a highly probabilistic basis. I don't want this. I never want to end up at the comfortable place where I know that everyone in my audience is like this, or they consume that type of femboy porn, or they are that kind of ideology. I'd rather keep a very open approach and an open competition with any alternatives. That's what keeps me alive. Now, one day I might have to join Andrew's platform, and I will certainly keep going on the Crucible to debate. But I will not do so unless I'm forced to, maybe if I get banned or if Odyssey policies changes radically. But I don't want to be a private streamer on a private platform. Just don't. Quite, says, great answer. Thank you so much. Ruffman says, JF, who would win an MMA fight? JF or Stefan Molyneux? But before you answer, let me inform you that this fight would take place in a steel cage, and it would be fought under the ancient Greco-Roman style rules. In other words, naked with a tether tied around the gonads and balls. Well, I do not accept to have any tether tied around my balls, but I truly believe that although Stefan Molyneux's cardio may be slightly above mine in the current state, I believe that I would definitely beat Stefan Molyneux. I think he's just too old. I don't want to call him out because I think between him and I, you know, there's always some friction since this conversation. I don't want to stack over it. But let me tell you, between you and I, my audience, and don't clip this, don't send this to Stefan, okay? But between you and I would absolutely accept a fight with Stefan Buddy. I would accept a fight with any intellectuals. And I would be there serious about it, and they would get an opportunity to beat me, but I would probably win there. These are the US states with the highest and lowest student debt. District of Columbia, Maryland, Georgia, Virginia, Florida. Those are the highest, and of course the more farmer states, central states, Wyoming, South Dakota, Iowa, North Dakota, and Puerto Rico. Well, it's smaller for other reasons, perhaps. But though this is the transfer of wealth that happened, you know, it's a transfer of wealth. Ultimately, what Joe Biden did is a transfer of wealth that highly favors DC. Elton John and Britney Spears duet Hold Me Closer shoots to number one on iTunes. Okay, I will not play it, but it's crap. But I'm super happy that Britney Spears is flying on her own wings. It's her first release since the end of her conservatorship. And whatever, you know, create crap music, that's okay. But at least it's her music. And at least she doesn't have to follow the slavery system of probate court. Pfizer vaccine whistleblower responds to motion to dismiss false claim suit. So that's a private citizen suing Pfizer because apparently in the US you can sue a company in the name of the government if it deceived the government. And so it's the False Claims Act, and it's going on, it's evolving, but it's not an important news. There's always a motion to dismiss. We'll see what happens with it in the court and eventually in the appeals court. Levitating nanoparticles could push the limits of quantum entanglement. Interaction between glass spheres suspended in a vacuum might one day lead to advances in quantum computing. Maybe. Start by doing optics computing, and then we can care about quantum computing, but do basic optics computing. I don't care about the levitation. I don't care about the glass. Do optics computing. It's a priority. Humanity should be investing all efforts to develop optical computing. I want millions and millions of optical transistors fitted on the tip of my finger. Now find a way. Cloud Warmer says, going to gym. Take it easy, guys. Thanks for the show, JF. I'll catch the rest offline. Bye-bye. We are headed toward the conclusion anyway. Two more news items. America wouldn't be in a recession now if we had stuck with Trump, says Stephen Moore. Well, no shit. Trump was pushing this country forward. The businesses felt that there would be money to be made in America, in the America of Trump. The businesses do not have this confidence today. So that's what's happening. And Mossad chief vows continued ups against Iran if nuclear deal finalized. Israel has said that its military and intelligence is prepared to act against Iran even if a deal is signed. Well, that's very constructive. You have your slave country that the US is trying to make a deal with Iran, and you're like passive aggressive. You're like, we're gonna continue hurting you even if you take the deal. Well, okay, then let's make no deal. Let's do exactly like Trump had done. No deal. No deal. Anyways, why would we pay a country not to get the nuclear weapon when it intends to use this nuclear weapon against a country we have nothing to do with, which is Israel? Arrange your own stuff with Iran if you're gonna fuck up all attempts at peace. Bezd says, that's exactly what I figured you would say, Papa. Just make sure you get a high intelligence, empathetic, INT-JA judge. INT-JA. If you decide to do it, not these low IQ judges you mentioned. You mean a judge for my fight? No, my fight is finishing with a knockout. Or it's finishing with me exhausted physically. But my fight finishes with a TKO because I will go apeshit in the ring. I will not keep anything back because ultimately I would be there to deliver a show. And I would like anyone who watches me boxing or MMA fighting, I would like them to at least have seen, okay, this guy gave his all to get to a knockout. Maybe I will get it, maybe I won't, but I want people to know that I won't stand there keeping my energy or being smart about it. I will just go apeshit because I don't care. It's not my career. I'm not a fighter. I would be there to deliver a show. That is it for tonight, Buzz. Bye-bye and see you all tomorrow. And yes, Bartertown, I would fight against Sam Hyde since you asked. I am absolutely interested at fighting Sam Hyde. I have seen his performance today, and I conclude that if I get 6 months of training, I can out-cardio Sam Hyde. And I can beat him. because Sam Hyde was gassed out today. I can get on the running track, do 3-4 hours of jogging a day, lift weights, do abs, and I consider that I would outlast Sam Hyde in the ring. I would totally beat him both in MMA and boxing. That is it. Bye-bye.